Welcome to today's deep dive. We are looking at the TIPI for Kids guidelines, specifically around childhood trauma and post-traumatic stress symptoms. And the mission for you today is to really understand why a child's trauma is, well, it's not just a miniature version of an adult's trauma. We want to decode those hidden physical signs of distress. So, okay, let's unpack this, because kids often just don't have the vocabulary to say they're scared or ashamed. Their bodies kind of do the talking.
Right, exactly. There's a huge distinction, because when adults go through trauma, they usually have, you know, a narrative. They can say, I feel afraid.
Yeah.
But young kids, they just don't have that capacity yet. So their trauma is fundamentally tied to caregiver dependency, meaning it lives almost entirely in their developing biology.
Wait, really? I mean, I get why a teenager might act out or rebel, but I read that a baby or a toddler can physically forget how to crawl. How does a psychological event just rewire basic motor skills like that?
Yeah, it sounds wild, but it really comes down to how the brain prioritizes survival. When a child experiences severe distress, maybe a type 1 trauma, which is a single catastrophic event, or type 2, which is complex, repeated adversity like emotional neglect, the brain's alarm system just takes over.
The amygdala, right? It just hijacks everything.
Exactly. It pulls resources away from higher level developmental milestones like language or fine motor skills and funnels everything into mere survival. So the child isn't just forgetting to crawl. Their brain has literally paused non-essential development because, well, it thinks it's under lethal threat.
Oh, wow. That's intense. So it's kind of like, if I can use an analogy here, it's like a building during an emotional earthquake. If the caregiver, who is the foundation of that building, responds with disbelief or falls apart, the whole structure fractures and the trauma just deepens.
That is the perfect way to put it. Parental support is actually the absolute strongest predictor of mental health outcomes following trauma. If the caregiver is dysregulated, or worse, the actual source of the trauma, that internal smoke detector in the kid never turns off.
Which explains the physical symptoms we see later on, right? Like school-aged kids getting chronic stomach aches.
Yeah, exactly. Their bodies are just flooded with chronic stress hormones.
Mm.
And that wreaks havoc on their digestive tracts. They literally cannot process the stress emotionally, so their gut takes the physical hit. And, you know, preschoolers might regress in toilet training. Teens might mask their pain by isolating themselves from peers.
Right, which brings us to how easily this gets misdiagnosed. Because adults see the physical or behavioral symptoms and just slap a label on it.
Oh, constantly. What's fascinating here is how trauma acts as a chameleon. Because it shows up biologically and behaviorally, it constantly mimics other conditions.
Like a hypervigilant kid getting diagnosed with ADHD because they can't sit still in class.
Yes, or trauma-induced withdrawal being mistaken for just, like, lazy depression.
Mm-hmm.
Or even anger. A teenager's anger is often used as a shield to cover up feeling completely powerless, but adults diagnose it as a conduct disorder.
So what does this all mean for how we actually spot it, especially since every family's background is totally different?
Well, you really have to look through a cultural lens. Culture dictates how that biology is expressed. In some societies, expressing emotional pain is taboo, so the brain funnels that distress entirely into somatic symptoms.
Like the stomach aches you mentioned. Or just being totally exhausted.
Exactly. While in other cultures, distress is framed in spiritual terms. And then there are rigid gender norms. A boy might mask his fear with aggression because he's afraid of the stigma of being a victim, you know?
Yeah, and a girl might internalize her trauma to avoid judgments about purity. But culture isn't just a mask hiding the trauma, right? It seems like it's also a powerful mechanism for healing.
Oh, very much so. Community storytelling, spiritual practices, cultural rituals, they are deeply regulating for a child's nervous system. They restore that shattered sense of belonging and safety.
It proves to their brain that the threat has finally passed.
Right. It's essential.
So for you listening, recognizing trauma requires looking past what adults casually write off as bad behavior. You have to see the subjective biological wound stored in the body.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we really have to stop asking, what is wrong with this child? And start asking what happened to this child and how is their body trying to survive it. It requires a trauma-informed, culturally sensitive lens.
Which leaves us with a final thought for you to ponder. If culture and community rituals so heavily dictate how childhood trauma is expressed and healed, how might our increasingly digital, physically disconnected modern world be altering the very way today's youth process and hold on to their pain?